Chapter 9. The Ascension of Daniel Rayborn. Our intensive training under Saint Germain continued for 3 months. During that time, our happiness was very great, for the joy and blessing of actually seeing, knowing, and conversing with the mighty I Am Presence was unspeakable, and can only be known through having the actual experience. We received weekly reports from the children, whose progress at the university was splendid. Bob's letters told us that all was moving in good order at the mine, and that the men were actually singing at their work. Saint Germain said at this time that justice and loving service could and would bring about that same activity everywhere in the business world when those same principles were applied. Saint Germain promised to meet us at the ranch later, and then went to the Far East. We left Washington on the 7th of April. We reached Denver on the 11th and drove to the ranch early the next morning, where everything seemed to breathe the joy, peace, and freedom of the wonderful mountains. As time for graduation drew near, we received a wonderful letter from Nada and Rex describing an experience which they surmised was given them by Saint Germain, and that brought them all great happiness. They sat up late one evening discussing a graduation suit for Rex and gowns for Nada and Pearl. The next morning, Rex found a beautiful new suit of clothes lying upon the table in his room, and attached was a slip of paper with this message, "Please accept this from those who love you." It was made of a most wonderful blue material and fitted him perfectly. In the rooms of Nada and Pearl were complete ensembles for each one with similar slips attached. Their gowns were of soft white material embroidered in exquisite design. Rex insisted that his father, Bob, Gaylord, and I attend their graduation exercises, and was so determined there seemed no way of refusing, so we returned for that event. This university had a benefactor whom the public did not know, but we began to suspect him to be Saint Germain. Later he told us that his president was a member of the Great White Brotherhood. Rayborn had invited the president and his sister to have dinner with him before his return west. The affair was one not soon forgotten, for when they arrived, Saint Germain was with them to everyone's surprise and joy. He spoke to us at length concerning the new era of university training. "In all fields of education," he said, "a certain demand is asserting itself throughout the race to compel recognition of the mighty I Am Presence. This is the only foundation upon which permanent happiness, freedom, and perfection can ever be built. It is only through the I Am that humanity can find release from its selfishness and its greed. Then all will come into the full use of the eternal abundance that is waiting to serve mankind. Each individual is an open doorway to all perfection, but that perfection can only express itself on earth when the outer self keeps its channel clear and harmonious by adoring and accepting the mighty I Am Presence. By accepting and keeping the attention on the I Am Presence, the individual can at any moment draw all good into the outer use of the personality. Thus he can call forth into his being and world all the good he desires. But the greatest power that this truth places at the command of the personal self is the use of divine love as a presence which goes before it and adjusts all outer activities, solves all human problems, and reveals the perfection that must come forth upon earth. Divine love, being the heart of infinity and of the individual, is an ever-flowing intelligent flame that releases energy, wisdom, power, and substance without limit. It will release boundless blessings to all who will harmonize their own personalities enough to let it come through. Divine love is the reservoir of life and the treasure chest of the universe. It automatically draws to the personal self every good thing when the outer activity of the mind acknowledges the I Am Presence and keeps attuned to divine love. Then All achievement is accomplished without struggle or strain, and all creative activity becomes the continual expansion and enjoyment of perfection. The more one studies life and contemplates perfection, the less he struggles with people and things, and the more he adores the God presence, for one that worships perfection must of necessity become that upon which his attention rests. When mankind fills the outer activity of the mind with thoughts and feelings of perfection, the bodies and affairs of humanity will bring into the outer that order and perfection also. The more we understand life and perfection, the simpler all becomes, until we have to do only one thing and do it all the time: fill our thought and feeling with divine love, always. Life never struggles, for that which struggles is the consciousness that attempts to limit life, and is but the interference with the perfection which is forever trying to come through. If the personal or outer self will just let life flow and keep at peace, the manifested result will be perfection, a divine way of life fulfilled. Many who start earnestly to attain this understanding become discouraged and discontinue their search, because they are looking for things instead of enjoying God, by adoring the beauty and power of the great light for itself only. If we seek the light because we love to adore the light, results are absolutely certain to follow, and we are then putting God first, which must be if the personal self is to be kept in its right relation to life. Late the following afternoon, we bade our friends goodbye, exchanged good wishes, and boarded the train for the West. The attendants whom Saint Germain had provided for Nada, Pearl, and Rex in their apartment while at the university disappeared as silently as they had come. Their entire association was an example of what it means to know, to dare, to do, to serve, and to be silent. Our train reached Denver at 4 o'clock of the third day after graduation, and early the next morning, Nada, Pearl, Azara, Bob, Rex, and I left on horseback for the Cave of Symbols. We reached the summit of the mountain about 11 o'clock, and Zara was happy in the extreme. She excused herself, saying she wanted to be alone for a while. In the meantime, the rest of us prepared lunch. Later, she returned, and the light in her eyes was brilliant. "I have had a strange experience," she replied. "I have seen the God of this mountain. He is a wonderful being. Such majesty, wisdom, and power I have never imagined before in anyone. He is at least 8 feet tall, and is God of this sacred mountain, as he calls it. He is known as the God Tabor. He told me he would have much to do in helping us all in the near future. Everything around here seems so familiar, as if I had been here before. He said I had been here in very ancient times. I do not fully understand what he means, but I feel as though I were just about to remember something important in the past. He explained that one day I would enter the heart of this mountain and receive of its eternal life and wisdom, but not until after 2 years had passed. He asked me to be at peace, that all might come about in divine order, and said that I had entered the great stream of life that would carry me on to eternal perfection." "My dear sister, you are indeed blessed," said Nada, going up and embracing her fondly. "Just trust the mighty I am present within you, and all will be revealed at the right time. Now come and have lunch. I should be glad to eat with you, but I feel a strength within which I have never experienced before," she replied. "I am so grateful that you brought me here today. You are so wonderful to me. I deeply admire the scenic beauty, but this inner glory surpasses everything in my life. God bless you, my beloved friends." Then all understood why we had been impelled to come to Table Mountain. Lunch finished, Rex suggested we go down the opposite side of the mountain, that Zara might see the amazing color effects of the more rugged scenery, and pass the entrance to the Cave of Symbols. As we came to the entrance of the cave, Rex stopped his horse. "Come," he said, "let's go in." "No, no," cautioned Zara, her face turning white. "We may not enter now. Please let us return home." We realized she was being directed from within and did not press things further, but turned our horses homeward. When we reached the ranch, Rayburn told us that he had received a message from Saint Germain for all of us to meet him in the tower room at 8 o'clock that same evening. The hour arrived, and as we approached the door, it opened wide, revealing Saint Germain. He welcomed us with his usual grace, and we took our places in the chairs, forming a circle. The Livingstons were surprised and admired the beauty of the room with great enthusiasm. When all had stilled themselves, Saint Germain said, "I have called this meeting especially for Zara, and secondly, for Daniel Rayburn." He gave a short but beautiful tribute of praise and gratitude to the I Am Presence, and as he spoke, the light blazed forth with great intensity and illumined the room brilliantly. He stepped in front of Zara and touched her forehead. Immediately, a circle of gold, rose, and blue light surrounded us, and we were enabled to see into the next octave of light, beyond the one in which humanity generally functions. The light began to focus around Zara, and her inner sight became opened. The experiences of many lives passing before her. In one of these, she had been under the instruction of Saint Germain, and at that time she had reached great enlightenment. In another life, she had been a priestess in the cave of a great mountain, and it was then she had first met the god Tabor. While this revelation of past lives was shown, the former memory of these activities was established, and Saint Germain explained it would be of very great benefit a few years later. As he finished the work with her, the beautiful circle of light slowly disappeared. "My brother," he said, addressing Rayburn, "it is my desire that you be at the Cave of Symbols on the 20th of July, that you may prepare for the final work we desire to do. This brother," he continued, indicating me, "will accompany you. Nada, Pearl, Rex, and Bob will be there at 8 o'clock on the morning of the 26th. Gaylord is to leave tomorrow morning on work for the Great White Brotherhood in South America. This preparatory work is invaluable to all, for as yet you have not the slightest conception of what it is doing for you. The radiance which will be given in the Cave of Symbols will bring the earthly pilgrimage to a close for Brother Rayburn, but the exact day and hour may not be revealed to anyone who is unascended, because his own mighty I Am Presence alone knows the chosen instant in which the great work of centuries will be consummated. I trust all the outer affairs of business are in readiness for this supreme event. If not fully completed, they can be finished within the next 10 days. Zara, your meeting with the god Tabor today is very significant. It means a great deal to you. Be patient, that the natural unfoldment of the light within you may be as rapid as possible. That which you have seen of the past tonight is but a small part of your former experiences, but it is all that is essential for you at this time. Rex, to you, Bob, and this brother, meaning me, I wish to say there is another great ore body not half a mile from the Master Discovery, as you call it, which I will reveal during your next trip to the mine 3 days hence. As the claims are all patented and the deeds in your hands, they will be safe until you return from the East in 2 years. By the time the rest return from the Himalayas, our beloved Livingstons will be ready to meet you again and take certain steps that will lead to their complete freedom. I wish each one to follow the directions you have been given, and remember always that nothing in life is as important as loving, adoring, and reaching up to the mighty I Am Presence within you and in the universe. Never lose the joy and enthusiasm of the quest for one moment. At intervals, I will be present while you are at the mine, but not visibly. When you return, Bob will come with you, prepared to go to the Far East. I may not appear again to the Livingstons in visible, tangible form before our journey, but, Zara, I wish to remind you that Dave Sutherland, whom you shall meet at the mine, is your twin ray. You will remember and recognize his face and radiation, for his features are similar to those of the embodiment in which you were last together. Beloved students, my blessings enfold each of you in the divine embrace of the mighty I Am Presence. As he spoke these last words, his body disappeared almost instantly. We made the trip to the mine with the Livingstons on the morning of the July 7th, and when we arrived, Bob told us St. Germain had left a note saying we were to arrive at 8 o'clock that evening. When the Livingstons were shown to the bungalow, their joy was very great, and justly so, for Rayburn had spared no expense to provide every comfort. It was large and cheerful, with every modern convenience provided, furnished handsomely, even with a beautiful baby grand piano. I have never seen greater or more sincere appreciation, and when we met at dinner, Zara threw her arms around Rayburn and kissed him, expressing her gratitude again and again for the wonderful blessings he, in his great love, had bestowed upon them. After dinner that evening, Bob excused himself, and half an hour later returned with Dave Sutherland. He was presented to all but Zara, who had momentarily left the room. She returned, and suddenly came face to face with Dave, as Bob was about to present him. We were all watching intently without appearing to do so. As their eyes met, neither moved for a moment. "I have seen you often in my dreams," was Dave's comment, "and yet it always seemed so much more real than a dream." "Yes," said Zara, "it is true, just as our beloved Saint Germain told me. I do remember you. I, too, have seen you often while my body slept. When I was very ill and there seemed no hope of recovery, you came to me, and each time I felt much stronger and more encouraged. Then Saint Germain came, and I was fully restored in a few hours. I will tell you all about that later." Every eye in the room was wet with tears as a reunion of these twin rays occurred. We were grateful to Saint Germain for the perfection he was constantly bringing about for each of us and the world. Truly, there is no deeper tie of love in the universe than that between an ascended master and his students. My congratulations and blessings are ever with you both, great souls of light, said Livingston, as he put one arm around Dave and the other around Zara. My cup of happiness is complete, said Mrs. Livingston as she kissed them both. Not a Pearl, Bob and Rex, each congratulated them, for they above all others could truly understand and realize what this union of twin rays meant. Presently a voice from the ethers began singing in clear, wonderful tones, "Love is the fulfilling of the law," with a beautiful accompaniment on stringed instruments. Dave was almost motionless with surprise, for it was the first time he had ever witnessed any manifestation of the ascended host. The music was their acknowledgement and blessing upon the eternal union of the three sets of twin rays. And Dave was like a flower just ready to open its petals to the full radiance of the sun. We explained as much as we were permitted concerning Saint Germain and his marvelous work. "It is all so amazing," said Dave, "but I feel something within that makes me know it is real and true. I want to know more about it and to meet him face to face." The next day, Livingston was made superintendent of the mine and shown the master discovery. He never tired of talking about it and was very happy about the entire arrangement. When we finished inspecting the workings, Bob turned everything over to his care. As each shift came off duty, Rayburn called the men together and introduced them to Livingston, explaining that he and Dave Sutherland were to be in charge of everything during the next 2 years. He made them realize that he deeply appreciated their loyalty and service, their service to him being rendered through his assistance and that those he left in charge were at all times to be considerate of their welfare. The quartet entertained the men again royally to everyone's deep enjoyment. That night, just as I was retiring, a slip of paper floated to the floor at my feet. I picked it up, and on it was a message from Saint Germain for Bob, Rex, and myself. He asked that we come to a certain place on the Rayburn mining property at 7 o'clock the next morning. We obeyed, and on our arrival the electronic current charged me from head to foot. All heard distinctly, spoken audibly, the words, "All calmly sit down in a triangular form. Focus the attention of your minds upon the mighty I am presence within, and hold it there firmly." In a few moments, I stepped out of my body, and as I did so, passed through the cosmic veil. There stood Saint Germain, in glorious, dazzling radiance. He greeted me in his loving, gracious way. "Come," he said, "we shall now enter the earth, where I shall not only reveal the great deposit of gold of which I told you, but the way the God of nature and the God of gold work together in perfect harmony to produce the precious metal that mankind intuitively loves to use for service and adornment. When I speak of the God of gold and the God of nature, I mean the pure and perfect intelligent beings that handle the forces in these realms and direct them consciously. The God of nature draws and directs the magnetic currents of the earth, and through intelligent manipulation produces certain definite results in and upon our planet. This activity is real, exact, and is performed according to law, as accurately as a chemist works in his laboratory. The God of gold draws, manipulates, and directs the electronic currents from our physical sun. These currents are drawn within the earth's crust to a certain depth, as ribbons are sometimes drawn through lace. This tremendously concentrated electronic energy, by being combined with the magnetic force from within the crust of the earth, reacts upon it in such a way as to slow down the rate of vibration. The radiation from gold is absorbed by both plants and human beings and utilized for many purposes. As I mentioned to you once before during your experiences in Unveiled Mysteries, the emanation from gold is a powerful purifying and energizing action within the human body and in nature. In all golden ages, the metallic form of gold was in common use by the mass of mankind, and during these periods their spiritual development reached a very high point of attainment. One reason for the chaos of the present time is because the gold in the commercial world is being hoarded, instead of being allowed to flow freely among mankind and carry its balancing, purifying, energizing activity into the commercial life of the race. The hoarding of gold in great quantities means an accumulation of inner force, which, if not released within a certain time, will release itself by the overcharge of its own tremendous inner power. Saint Germain then drew me closer into his radiance, and the inner activity of the earth was revealed. Before us stood two transcendently radiant beings, one drawing and directing the magnetic currents of the earth, and the other those of the gold which had been formed within the earth's crust. The one whom he called the God of nature was a being of glorious beauty and power. His body was fully 6 feet in height and clothed in garments of green, gold, and pink. They looked as if they were made of a self-luminous substance. An aura of intense blue surrounded his head, and rays of light poured forth from the heart, head, and hands. The ray from the right hand was green, and that from the left pink, those from the head and heart being white and gold, respectively. The being whom Saint Germain called the God of Gold was enveloped by such a dazzling golden light that it took several seconds before I could look at it steadily enough to see further detail. His garments, too, were of light substance, but the rays that extended from the head and hands were of fiery gold. The rays from the heart, blazing white, and the aura, which extended fully a foot around the head, looked as if made of single rays of white lightning. The existence of gold, Saint Germain continued, in white quartz is its purest formation within the earth at the present time, the white quartz being the residue, so to speak, from the magnetic currents, and the metallic gold being the lowered rate of the electronic substance from the sun. This is the reason for its being spoken of occasionally as a precipitated sun ray. That phrase is nearer the truth of what actually takes place than men dream. Now watch. Here the two beings directed the rays of light through their hands to a cavity in the rocks, into which a small quantity of gold had run through a connecting fissure when in the molten state, evidently caused through volcanic action. The intense heat had sealed the fissure with molten granite, thus hiding the entire vein leading into the cavity. This particular ore body, he continued, at its highest point is about 200 feet below the surface. From a geological standpoint, it could not and would not have been discovered. After you return from the Far East, it will be opened up, and one day the ore will be used for a special purpose, so that mankind may be blessed and enlightened. We continued to watch these two beings as their projection of the light rays caused the gold within the cavity to expand and glow, as plants do in sunlight. We have been here about 30 minutes, remarked Saint Germain as he turned away, and we came back again to my physical body. Rex and Bob looked as though in a deep sleep. A few moments later, when they opened their eyes, I explained to them what had happened. Their mission being different from mine, the revelation and instruction they received was of a more individual nature, yet they had retained a full consciousness during the experience and had been shown part of the same activity I had been observing. We returned to the bungalow at 8 o'clock for breakfast and described our experiences to Nada, Pearl, and Rayborn. It was then he told us we were to return to the ranch on the 10th. The evening of the 9th was full of music and joy, in which the Livingstons joined, for we were not to be with them again for 2 years. Our drive home was uneventful, and the next 10 days Rayborn spent in closing his business activities, giving everything to Nada and Rex. His holdings were very large, and his great fortune placed his two children among the wealthiest of our western country. Surely no two people were ever more worthy to be custodians of God's riches. On the evening of the 19th, we all assembled in the tower room, where a surprise awaited us. For as we opened the door, it was already illumined by a soft white light. When we had become very still, Rayborn rose to his feet and poured forth a prayer of praise and thanksgiving, in deep gratitude for the good that had been his, ending with a farewell blessing to all his earthly possessions for their great service to him. We then entered into deep meditation and received great assistance and illumination. After our meditation, we returned to the music room, where the quartet sang for about an hour. Then Rayborn embraced each of his loved ones and went to his room, as he and I were to leave early the next morning for the Cave of Symbols. We left at 6 o'clock, Rex driving us to the nearest point. The walk to the entrance in the invigorating morning air was very exhilarating, and as we approached, we heard the sound of throbbing machinery. When we arrived at the second entrance, Saint Germain waited there for us. He seemed more godlike, more marvelous than I had ever seen him before. We stepped to the white arch, and it opened before us without anyone touching it. Where the blue and red arches had been in our previous visits, we now saw dazzling white ones instead. These symbolized a cosmic recognition of the raising of one of Earth's children, which was about to take place. We entered the radio chamber, and I can still recall the feeling of peace I enjoyed while there. Unless one has experienced the great happiness of being once again within the radiance of those marvelous chambers, such feelings of exaltation can scarcely be conveyed to others. These halls have been charged for hundreds of centuries with the glorious presence of the mighty ascended masters of love, light, and wisdom, the Legion of Light, and the Great White Brotherhood. Our meditation here was a vastly different activity from that in any other environment, and the value of such an outpouring is beyond human conception. Saint Germain asked us to be seated while he gave the necessary instructions as to what he desired us to do. I marvel at it to this day, how clearly the memory of a student retains that instruction, for it is never repeated except by the master himself. Yet it is as clear as though recorded in letters of light upon my memory. When he had finished the instruction, we went to the sleeping apartments which we had occupied before, our seamless robes remaining there for our use. We entered into deep meditation, holding our attention on the mighty I Am Presence, the Master Christ, within our own hearts. At the end of 3 hours, our consciousness was lifted to great heights, and revelations that astonished us both were shown. We had entered realms of which we had heard, but never retained conscious memory of having been there. Presently, we heard the sweet tones of a bell announcing the Master's approach. His face was radiantly happy. "I am very pleased with your first real meditation," he said. "Keep this always a sacred hour every day." He extended both hands to us, and in each was a crystal goblet filled with a heavy golden liquid that looked like honey, yet sparkled as if made of diamonds. "This," he said, "will be your principal sustenance during the ensuing days, for it is the very essence of life. The culmination of our brother Rayborn's experience is the most vital of the soul's entire pilgrimage on earth, and the summum bonum of all human existence. Now, come with me to the Chamber of Light, and do not be alarmed at what you either see or experience." We passed through the audience chamber, and at its far end, a space about the size of a door opened before us where an instant previous we had seen only a solid wall. The aperture closed quickly behind us, and we found ourselves in the center of a perfect sphere. There were 3 chairs of solid gold placed so as to form a triangle in the middle of the floor. "Please be seated," said Saint Germain, he occupying the 3rd chair. The chamber was filled with a soft glowing light, and this began to steadily increase in both intensity and movement until we became conscious of its amazing velocity. Tongues of flame began to dart forth from the surrounding light, penetrating our bodies with an astonishing effect, in which we felt electrons entering and charging our minds and bodies with their tremendous energy. Yet the sensation was one of delightful coolness. As this continued, we felt and saw the light within us rise and expand, until in a few moments the most delightful fragrance of roses filled the entire sphere. It grew stronger, and then we became aware that it emanated from the light within ourselves. Suddenly the essence of the roses condensed, and we lay upon couches of roses of very exquisite colors. Our experience brought an exaltation to our consciousness that no words can describe, and produced a feeling of deep peace. There was nothing imaginary about this whole experience, for the perfection that exists within pure electronic light is without limit, and by the proper understanding of its manifestation, it can and will take any form and quality that an ascended master chooses to impose upon it. The glorious feeling of peace, happiness, and bliss we experienced obliterated all idea of time, for the inner and the outer activity had become one complete unit of harmony, focused for the time being by Saint Germain into the absolute purity and perfection of the one great light, the mighty I Am Presence. Gradually, the velocity of the light changed, growing less and less, until it shone with the soft radiance of moonlight on a placid sea. To our astonishment, we found the roses real. Although they had come out of the light, they did not disappear with it. After this experience, I could easily understand why the rose has been used throughout the ages as the symbol of the soul, and why the radiation from an ascended master so often has the fragrance of a rose. "You shall come here, my brother," said Saint Germain, addressing Brayborn, "every day at this hour, but the remainder of the time you are to be alone." When we returned to the audience chamber, I realized we had been in the chamber of light for more than 3 hours. Yet it seemed only a few moments. Saint Germain gave us another cup of the golden liquid as nourishment for the body. "Now go to your chambers and sleep," he instructed, "until I call you." Wherever we moved, the wonderful fragrance of roses enveloped us, and scarcely had we lain down until we were sound asleep. Each day this marvelous work went on until the arrival of Nada, Pearl, Rex, and Bob on the 26th of July. When greetings had been exchanged, they commented upon the soft radiance and fragrance of roses that surrounded my body continuously, and were very happy about this part of my attainment. During the 27th, many of the ascended masters came, singly and in groups, until all who were to take part in the work had arrived. At 11 o'clock that night, we were escorted into the electrical chamber, where the marvelous atomic accelerator was waiting to receive another of God's children and send him forth into his eternal freedom, a son of light, a true image and likeness of the mighty I Am Presence. As we entered the chamber, the light within it was intense, yet it held tiny points of more dazzling light that darted to and fro in the atmosphere continually. Brayborn seated himself in the chair, and the 24 present formed a circle about the accelerator, Saint Germain standing directly behind him, and I just in front. Nada, his twin rays, stood within the circle. When all were ready, Saint Germain commanded the individual attention of each one to be held steady upon the presence and the supremacy of the I Am, and that of the Master Jesus. Suddenly, like a flash of lightning, a circle of the most intense, dazzling white light surrounded us, drawing steadily toward the chair, until it was only about 10 feet across. The light within Daniel Brayborn expanded and met the circle of light without. As they touched, he began to rise slowly to a distance of about his own height above the accelerator, the light within him continuing to increase. Nada, his own twin ray, rose also and drew toward him, passing within the smaller circle of light. They met in divine embrace for a moment. The next instant, the face of the Master Jesus shone out in an aura of gold, pink, and blue above them. Inclining their heads toward us, and smiling radiantly, they looked upward as a great ray of intense white light descended, enveloping them both in its protecting radiance, blessing their glorious union and hiding them from our sight, while they passed beyond all care and limitation into their eternal perfection of being, clothed in bodies of everlasting light, the robe of immortality that shines brighter than the sun at noonday. Thus did another mighty master presence of the great I Am enter into cosmic service, as the celestial chorus sang its anthem of eternal praise and victory, unto the light of God that never fails.